now, here's your host, Angelo Petitti.
Good morning, everyone. This is Noelle in for Angelo this morning. I hope everybody's having a great weekend. We did get some rain yesterday, and it was really needed out there, but believe it or not, it was only about a quarter inch, maybe a little bit more. So make sure you're watering well. Still needs most lawns, gardens, borders, landscapes. If things are looking dry and dropping leaves, make sure that you are applying water, and you want to make sure that you're running it so it is soaking into the soil and filtering deeply into the root system, because we don't want our plants to dry out. Okay, a few gardening notes for this week. Obviously, 4th of July is that time on the calendar where it's actually time to apply step 3 lawn care. So if you're using the step system out there on your lawns, step 3 right around the 4th of July is what we talk about putting it down. Most of the time, your step 3 is a straight fertilizer just to help really keep the lawn healthy and growing, so forth, through especially dry times like this. But make sure that when you do apply it, water it in after application, okay? Or apply it just before we have some rain. Crabgrass is growing, and it's definitely out and about. Those little tufts of grass are developing. And so if you do have it in the lawn, you can use something like Ortho Weed Clear, or any of the selective lawn weed controls that are labeled for crabgrass. So make sure that you look at that label and use that selective herbicide for lawns, okay, safe for lawns. If it's in your bed, so you're starting to find those crabgrass clumps in garden beds and so forth and in the landscape, you can use something like Burnout. Burnout has also been renamed to Captain Jack's Deadweed Brew. So if you see those two products, those are natural products, and they are what we call non-selective weed control. So they will kill anything that's green. But again, it is a natural formulation for those of you that, don't want to use Roundup or something similar to Roundup. Okay, make sure your lawns and beds, as I mentioned, get watered. So this note's always on here. Angelo always mentions giving lawns about a half inch of water twice a week. But really, for garden beds and landscape beds where you are seeing some dry areas, you want to really put the soaker hose out there and just let it run. Usually letting it run for about 30 minutes to an hour, probably closer to an hour, especially with how dry we've been, to give those plants a nice deep soaking. Okay. Keeping your hanging baskets looking nice out there, just make sure that you continue to feed. We haven't had a lot of rainfall, but you are irrigating those hanging baskets and containers out there. So therefore, applying Osmocote, you usually apply Osmocote about once every 2 months, but depending on how your plants are performing, if they've lost a little bit of vigor, I would go ahead and reapply if you haven't applied lately. And Osmocote is just a nice slow release granular fertilizer. It works really well. You can use things like Plant Tone or Flower Tone on the plant material as well in containers, if you prefer to use more of a natural product. But again, just those granular fertilizers last longer in the soil and provide an even feeding for your plant material. If you prefer to use things like Liquid Miracle-Gro, where you mix the blue powder with the water, that's fine. You just have to really keep up with it and apply it usually once every 2 weeks. So it's a little bit higher maintenance to use those fertilizers, but it's really up to you, depending on what works well for you in the garden. If you are having problems keeping up with the watering in your container gardens, because of course those always dry out the fastest, you can try something like Hydratein. Hydratein granules, so it's like little brown pieces of clay, it almost looks like, if you will, and you go ahead and you sprinkle that in your container gardens, hanging baskets, window boxes, what have you, and they actually absorb moisture from the air and can reduce your watering. So if you are having issues trying to keep baskets watered and so forth. Try Hydrotane. You'll really like it. It works very, very well. And then, of course, you have to watch, so don't overwater in that instance, because it really does help you in the long run. Okay, heat and humidity out there. Obviously, we've had a lot of that causing some lawn diseases out there. I know people have seen rust and other things, brown patches and so forth. So make sure, you know, at the first sign, or if you seem to always get lawn disease around the same time of the year, mark the calendar and then look ahead. What you can do is you can put down Scott's Disease X, and that will help prevent and or cure those problems. Now, of course, the sooner you catch the disease, you see it out there, you want to go ahead and get that treatment down, because the faster you treat, of course, that's the lesser that you'll have the disease issue. So make sure you keep an eye out for those types of things. You can also use Bonide Infuse, which is a systemic disease control, and there is a hose end spray that you can use on the lawn as well, if you'd prefer to do that. We have seen some nut sedge growing up for sure, popping up in the garden beds and also in the grass. So watch for that. Bonide Sedge Ender is going to be the best product to use to get rid of that. Of course, nut sedge is that light green, shiny grass that goes really fast, really tall, quickly. So do look out for that. That definitely has been sprouting. Keep your perennials looking beautiful by deadheading. So Angelo often mentions, you know, as perennial plants bloom out and they get to be about 75% finished, go ahead and cut them back. And most perennials really do have a good vigor that keeps them vegetatively growing, actively growing. And so if you were to cut them back, typically about 75%, leave that lower foliage up and go ahead and feed them. This is the time to do that. So most of your perennials need to be fed once in spring, once in summer, again with a granular fertilizer like Osmocote or Plantone, what have you. And it really does work very, very well. So if those plants are looking a little bit tired or peaked, go ahead and just cut them back, feed them. Again, keep them watered well, and you should get some more blooms coming out of them. Feed your vegetables. Don't forget about that. And your herbs, of course. Keep on picking and pruning so you keep those plants working for you. Make sure you're applying, you know, something like Garden Tone or Tomato Tone, especially with your tomatoes. I was reading the label on Garden Tone the other day just to kind of refresh my memory. But it looks like, you know, applying Garden Tone in your veggie garden, it's about once a month. Again, depending on, you know, how much we're irrigating and rainfall, but do keep in mind that you want to apply that a little bit more often to the vegetable garden than you would apply plant tone out in the landscape. Okay, so do keep that in mind. If you're seeing chipmunks, groundhogs, raccoons, skunks, squirrels, all those guys, Repels All works very well. So if you do need a repellent, Repels All will work on all of those issues. And then if you still see some burrowing in the lawns or maybe around the plant material through the mulch beds, go ahead and apply Mole Max. Mole Max is going to work for moles and voles. It can work on chipmunks as well. So if you do see that happening in the garden, just keep that product handy. And then I was going to say, great plants for this week. Oh my gosh, the astilbe. If you're looking for some color in the shade, astilbe looks absolutely gorgeous. The chinensis or visions varieties are beautiful right now. They are one of the later blooming astilbes out there. Some of the early blooming got a lot of heat, and astilbe don't necessarily like to be hot and dry. So if you can keep your astilbe moist, evenly moist, that's a always great. Makes the plant last a lot longer, bloom a lot longer for you. They don't tend to dry up as quickly. And Visions is absolutely gorgeous. And it really does have a very rough texture to it. So that's really good as far as deer resistance. It attracts pollinators, including your hummingbirds, into the garden. So look out for that. And then the rosemary. Oh my gosh, rosemary is really performing well because it has been hot and dry. And so try to grow some rosemary out in the garden. There's a beautiful tall variety called Gorizia, and she produces really long stems. And so you can take those stems, you can actually clip those stems. You go ahead and you soak them in water, in cool water, and then you can use them as skewers for shish kebabs and different things on the barbecue. So that's something really, really great. And then the hydrangeas, oh my gosh, they're coming into beautiful flower. Actually, they're already, most of them are already flowering really, really well for us at the nurseries and at the store. So look for Hydrangea Summer Crush. That's one of Angelo's favorites. It is a compact macrophylla or mophead type. It really is beautiful. It's one of the newest members of the Endless Summer family. And it has a bright raspberry pink coloring to it. It can change to a purpley blue, but I really, really enjoy that nice bright raspberry color. And really, it only grows about 2 by 2 in the garden. So it is very, very compact, very floriferous, and looks great with the astilbe that I mentioned, coral bells, boxwood. They all grow really well together. Okay, folks, that's all for the garden this week. And we're going to take a short pause and we'll get right back to your phone calls.
At Petiti's. Hi, I'm AJ Petiti. Summer's in full swing, and Petiti Garden Center.
Again, Angelo Petiti.
Good morning, everybody. This is Noelle in for Angelo, and we're going to take your phone calls at 216-578-1100 or 216-578-1111. Okay, let's see. It looks like somebody is right here. Hi there. You're on Gardening with Angelo.
Good morning, Noelle.
Good morning.
Have you mentioned something about deadheading, and my questions are regarding that. I've got a bloomerang, dark purple, two of them actually, that I planted at the end of last year.
Okay.
And Angelo spoke about them last week a little bit. I got a few blooms in the spring, but not a lot, but I did not deadhead or trim the bushes. What is the procedure for them?
Sure. So bloomerang lilacs, of course, are the repeat blooming lilacs. So with any lilac, you're going to grow them in full sun, typically to make them perform and bloom the best that they can. You know, your fertilization, just like with any of your deciduous flowering trees and shrubs, is going to be, you know, feeding them twice a growing season, once in the spring, once in midsummer, and you can use just plant tone and iron tone both times with that. With lilacs, sometimes we'll feed them some triple phosphate just to get them to really go into bud and bloom cycle a little bit heavier. So you can always apply triple phosphate as well if you're finding that they're a little bit lacking in bloom. I will have to say with bloomerangs, let's see, dark purple, Angelo always says it's the best variety to grow. So you do have a good one there. I will have to say that they do need to be cut back after that first bloom cycle, even if it's lackluster. And some of them were, I feel like, this spring, whether it had to do with, you know, cold snap later in April, whether it had to just do with how wet and cool we were earlier in the season. But they weren't super profuse in the springtime. And then you'd go ahead and you would cut back probably their panicles are about, I'd say about maybe 8 to 10 inches long. Okay. So you go ahead and cut below the panicle, probably about 12 inches, maybe 18 inches back into the plant material. Okay. And after that, you'd go ahead and feed if you hadn't done so already. Okay. And then typically what we do with bloomerangs, you can get 3 blooms out of them. But I hate to say it, that's not the most reliable scheme. To me, I feel like 2 definitely, but 3 bloom cycles, you really got to work with it. So you would cut them back, like I said, 12 to 16 inches or so into the plant. Go ahead and fertilize. And I would say Angela would tell you to go ahead and put Osmocote on just because it's a triple 14 and it'll really feed the plant fairly quickly. And then it'll fill out again. And so as soon as you see those buds set and open, then as soon as they're finished, it's the same thing. You want to go ahead and cut those back. And that second bloom, I would go ahead and I would just deadhead. I wouldn't remove more below the flower, okay? And then the same thing, you got to feed them again and try to get that third bloom cycle out of them, okay? And typically it's going to be later fall if you can get 3.
Osmocote mm-hmm. again?
Yep. Osmocote is going to be a little bit faster feeding just because it's a man-made fertilizer. Not necessarily too fast, but I think you're going to have, just a little bit more accurate feeding with them. And that's basically it. So that's how the bloomerang lilacs work. But like I said, 2 bloom cycles, it's pretty easy to do and get them to perform. 3 bloom cycles, I think, is a little bit harder, and it's definitely higher maintenance. Okay.
If you do have a third bloom, just basically the bloom again and mm-hmm. no fertilization at that point.
Correct. Because we really want to avoid feeding plant material going into the fall and winter because right. you really don't want to force any new growth. And therefore, that growth could get damaged by winter weather. So, yeah. So right after you're done pruning, go ahead and feed, except not that third bloom cycle. Correct.
Okay. Yeah, because when Andrew was talking about, deadheading and cutting back, and I was thinking, the bush will never get that tall because you keep,
correct.
Said cut 12, mm-hmm. 18 inches, but it's only the first time, then
yeah.
the other 2 are the blooms.
Do you have the dwarf? So is it, no. It's bloomerang dark purple, but it's not the dwarf because there are smaller varieties out there. But yeah, dark purple is still going to grow. I'd say I've seen it out there in the landscape about 5 foot, 6 foot, somewhere around there. But again, depending on how much you're cutting back, of course, that's going to reduce some size and keep it a little bit more compact too.
Right. And I can maintain it the size that I want.
Basically. Yes. Uh-huh. Right. As long as you're pruning right after that bloom cycle. Right. Right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. And then, 2 other, plants. I've got a whoops-a-daisy and, Aquila. And you had mentioned that deadheading those, you said, in your opening comments about 75%?
Yes. So whoops-a-daisy is really productive. It's a great little daisy, Shasta daisy, for those of you not familiar. It is a proven winner variety. And boy, it's a powerhouse. It'll just keep on producing. Now, with daisies, sometimes you can shear off that, the top growth. But I like to use a hand pruner and go through and cut back those stems individually down to where you get side buds. Okay. Shasta daisies do take a little bit, different pruning, if you will, because you can't just take the grass shears and cut off the top like some of them. But that one's a really good one to just kind of go through, cut the stems, and every time you cut the stems down to a side bud, you're going to get more flowering out of it. So it's really a great little daisy, very, very productive. The Aquilea or yarrow that you have, most of the yarrows can be sheared back. So you have those flowers come up and fade in color and, start to kind of yellow out. They get a little bit of a weedy yellow color on them. It doesn't matter what color you're growing. And then go ahead and you can cut them back and you can almost see where new growth is coming from the base on the yarrow. And you can go ahead and you can shear those back by 75%, no problem. And you'll see all new growth coming up from the bottom. So, a little bit different maintenance as far as pruning, but for the most part, when you see those plants, you know, die back about 75%, or, you know, they're done with their flowering, go ahead and just cut them back, and they'll definitely produce for you again.
And that whoopsie daisy you mentioned down to a side bud, but that would be, again, low on the...
Yeah, it depends. Sometimes whoopsie daisy will produce buds all the way up that stem. So, again, just depending on what you want to do, and I think that's a great, again, with daisies, with Shasta daisies, they're really great for the cutting garden. They're great to arrange in vases because they're really meant to be cut. Go ahead and cut those stems down to a side bud, and you're ready to go, and those side buds will develop.
Okay. All right, so you just have to check each one.
Sure.
Very good. Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good morning. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Go ahead with your question, please.
I was in line. Okay.
Yeah.
Hi. It's so good to talk to you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
So it was hard for me to know what questions. I have so many questions to ask you. But let me just tell you what we're doing. We had our front yard, which is fairly small, plowed up because we had changed the walkway in the front. So they did quite a bit of damage. And I had a guy come in, and he rototilled a little bit with a small rototiller, the front part where it's shady, and he put down some sweet peat and a little bit of grass. But I really was thinking about putting ground cover there instead.
Okay.
And because... It just seems like every time we put grass in, it just gets so many other issues, and I don't want to deal with that. So I was thinking about how much should I put down, and what kind of ground cover would be good for primarily shade, and how I would merge that with the rest of the garden. I have one corner up in the front corner that is not shaded completely by our big silver maple, as you know how they reach out with their roots and
sure.
and shade. And we've had it trim back quite a bit, a couple times. And so it's usually the last part of the day that we have sun up front. And I'm hoping that the plants that I bought from your store in Mentor will do okay in that corner.
Uh-huh.
And then I was going to build sun plants out on that corner, which is the southwest corner.
Okay.
And hopefully they'll be okay, but I was thinking about how close to put them together. And then maybe, you know, should I have plant to plant to plant, or should I have mulch in between them or grass? So I'll leave it open to you and let you have whatever you want to say.
Okay, sure. So shady ground cover, it's going to be a drier area because of that silver maple and the roots that you mentioned. So there's lots that will do well. The Lamium family, there's White Nancy, there's Purple Dragon, there's some very pretty varieties. They have like a white silvery coloration to them and some flowering. Those do wonderfully in the shade, and especially the dry shade. And I'll tell you, they'll cover. I always recommend planting your ground covers. We sell them in market baskets, so you cut them up into 8 pieces, and you plant those 8 pieces 12 inches apart. I'm going to have to put you on pause here because we're right at the 7:30 mark, but we'll
I'll
come back and we'll talk about that. Okay,
thank
so we'll
you.
Put you on hold right now. Okay, folks, we're going to take a short pause, and we'll be right back.
Home of the Cavaliers and Guardians. This is the Big One. News Radio WTAM Angelo Petiti.
Hi, everybody. This is Noelle in for Angelo, and we're going to get back to our caller here about kind of a dry ground cover needed in the front yard, and then we'll talk about some perennial spacing. So I hope you're still there on the line. We were talking about Lamium. And I think Lamium is really going to help you out quite a bit in that dry area. It does spread. Now, remember I said 12 inches apart. So we always talk about with perennials and perennial spacing. So this will help you with your sun perennials that you have there. You do, when you plant perennials, you do want to keep in mind of what their full size is going to be. So the tags and so forth will give you an idea of what that full size is. You never want to plant perennials next to each other, okay?
No.
So you always want to give them some good spacing. And the first year, you might put mulch around them. You might add a little bit of color with some annuals in between them just to kind of fill in some space if you wish. But I'm going to tell you, the first year with perennials, they sleep. The second year with perennials, they creep. And the third year, they leap. So it's always that third season in the ground. And it's really true that after you plant perennials, you think, oh my gosh, that's what I wanted, you know. But it just takes them a little bit of time to get established and get going. And once they get going, you think, oh yeah, that's exactly what I wanted. So just keep in mind, growing perennials, you got to be a little bit of patient for it. And with ground covers like the Lamium, if you want it to fill in quicker, you can definitely space them closer together. So you can space them at 8 inches apart or 6 inches apart. That's really up to you, because they will eventually grow fairly quickly. And most ground covers, they'll extend their branching out anyway, and they typically are a little bit faster growing. So there you go. You've got Lamium for those drier areas. Again, it's deer resistant. It does really well in our gardens. You can control
the lamb's ear. That's the lamb's ear.
Not lamb's ear, Lamium.
Lamium.
Okay.
Lamium. So what does that look like?
Lamium, like I said, it's a very low growing ground cover. It is a green leaf covered by white or silver coloration. Then it has little white or purple or pink, because there's a couple different varieties, but they almost have like a little sort of capped flower on them, and they're fantastic. And like I said, deer resistant, rabbit resistant, you know, great in dry shade, all those things. So there's lots of ground covers out there that will work in both sun and shade, but I think Lamium really puts up with a lot of abuse and can adapt very quickly. And again, we don't have any, you know, deer or rodent issues with it. So it's a really good ground cover. Okay.
And how do you spell that?
Lamium.
Just like it sounds. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Lamium.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I did buy, when I was at the store, let's see if I can get my list here. I bought a flat of, Ajuga Bronze Beauty.
Okay. Ajuga will work. It is a fast growing ground cover. It works in sun or shade, no problem. Again, just you've got to keep it a little bit consistently moist to get it to fill in a little bit faster, if you will.
Okay.
But it's nice. It's got a beautiful dark leaf to it. You know, little spiky purple flowers. So yeah, it'll work. It'll work.
Could I kind of put them in different places around, like, so that I'd have two different textures and colors within the same area? Don't you think
you don't want to mix the two ground covers?
Okay.
So yeah, so you can, like I said, you can cut that market basket into eight different pieces, and you can kind of set those eight different pieces out. We usually like put a zigzag pattern out there as they fill in together. Okay. And then you would want to keep that Ajuga in the same area. And then if you decided to go with the Lamium later, you'd want to keep the Lamium in the same area. So they fill into each other, into the same plant, if you will, not the other plant. You'll have a really kind of strange patchwork going on. If that's something that you want to try, you can certainly try it. Don't get me wrong, but I think it'll be more like a checkerboard out there. So
okay, better to have a little here, a little there, but not all mixed
up.
Okay, and so we bought three of the mini roses. I'm going to put up in the far corner with the most sun.
Okay,
and should I go by the, like, if it's 2 to 3 feet or 3 to 5 feet on any plant.
Yes.
I go by that.
Correct.
And then do I allow anything more, much more beyond that?
You just go by the spacing that's what's on the tag.
Okay.
So, yeah, so really if they spread 2 to 3 foot, then I'd go ahead and I would keep them, you know, spread out by 3 foot for sure.
And as far as pruning goes, do they take pruning pretty well?
Which? I'm sorry.
The roses?
Yeah, miniature roses, mm-hmm. you barely have to, you know, deadhead them. They'll just kind of keep on growing over and over. But whenever you can get out there and do it, it's always beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for all your time and input. I appreciate it. And
absolutely.
Have a great day.
You too.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, I have some clematis that grow up on my deck.
Okay.
And there's like kind of a lattice work wall that they grow in and through.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our deck needs to get painted. And so I had to take them down while they're in their glory and blooming really well. And so I took them off the lattice work. I didn't cut them back.
Okay.
I kind of flopped them over.
Sure.
So now the deck is done being painted, so I want to put them back up. Should I be trying to just tie them to the lattice, or is there any wisdom in just kind of cutting them at a certain point, and will they kind of regrow this growing season?
Actually, not this growing season. And it's so funny. You're going to laugh, but clematis are so strange. Like you're trying to get them to grow a certain way and you want them to branch a certain way and they never want to do it the way you want it. So what I would do is I would definitely loosely tie, and you can use twine. You can use, Velcro, ties. You can use a lot of different things out there, to get those vines back up there. But you're going to laugh. It's really something to try to get them to grow back where you want them. So, so just loosely tie them back up. No problem whatsoever. You can leave them on the ground. They can actually be a ground cover, believe it or not. So it's
like they're definitely still alive. A week
yeah.
Later.
Yeah.
So,
good. Yeah. So it's really up to you. But yeah, I think tying them, getting them back to the spot where you want them and originally had them is always going to be a good thing. And eventually they'll produce, new twining tips on their vines that'll keep them up and keep moving through that trellis that you've provided for them. So, yep, just tie them back up.
So I feed them with something. Obviously, there was, some attrition as they had to cut some things off the lattice. And what should I feed them with?
Yeah, plant tone and iron tone, really. And we typically do that just once in spring and once in midsummer, and you're ready to go. They'll do great.
Okay. I have another question.
Sure.
About compost. My wife and I started our compost pile this year, and I think in the next couple weeks we may have some to use. But I'm used to just fertilizing with, the Plantone, Iron Tone, Holly Tone. How does compost fit into the fertilizer plan for the yard and the garden?
Compost is always going to feed your soil and benefit your soil, increase oxygen, increase water spaces. So it does provide some nutrition, but on a very, very low percentage. So compost works very well alongside with your plant tones, your iron tones, and what have you. And we always talk about with natural fertilizers, with organic fertilizers like the plant tones and holly tones, that ends up feeding your soil as well and the beneficial bacteria that's in the soil. So it feeds the soil, which helps feed your plants, right, in the long run. So compost is just an additional, beneficial element that you're adding to your soil. So it'll all work out great, no problem.
I was thinking about focusing on some of the beds where it just seems like the soil isn't as healthy or good, as opposed to feeding it directly to plants, but
right.
Kind of in it's less.
For sure.
Less good soil. Okay.
Yeah. Compost will help your drainage. It'll help any areas that are really rocky, hard pan clay, all those types of things Well, the more organic matter like compost that you do add to soil, you will find that your digability, you know, your water permeation, all those types of things, it'll help aerate the soil. So yeah, you'll find as you use compost through the garden and as that soil changes, you'll notice a big difference.
And do I need to work that into the soil, or do I just kind of place it on top and let it?
I'd work it in. I'd try to work it in, you know, scratch it in. If you can get it in, you know, the top inch or two of the soil, I think it'll really help you and do what it needs to do for you. You don't have to rototill it in at all, but just take a cultivating fork or a hard rake and try to work it into the soil best you can.
Okay. And then another question. I bought some Coreopsis at your store for the first time. They're blooming now. They're a variety of different ones, mostly ones that have kind of thinner stems and a lot of smaller flowers.
Sure, the tick seed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So from a deadheading perspective, mm-hmm. it seems difficult to kind of do them one by one. Is this one of these ones where once it's, like, you know, you said in the opening, once it's about 75% bloomed out, you just actually cut it back and then feed it and then have it, hopefully it'll come back?
Yep.
Or is the approach?
Yeah, yep, exactly. Okay. Exactly. So Coreopsis, you've got two types. You've got tick seed, which is like your native type, that does have that kind of ferny, very, very thin foliage. And you can see mm-hmm. all the buds coming up from the base. And then the top typically flowers and then fades. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones I just take grass shears. I clean off my grass shears and I just go ahead and I just chop right off the top. Okay. And I'll probably take, I would say about 50%, go down about 50%, and you'll see all those buds underneath, and they'll come out and they'll flower for you, no problem. The grandiflora types are the ones that have thicker leaves. Usually the leaves are closer to the base of the plant. They do have large, you know, pretty roughly flowers on them. Sometimes you can get a good cut with just grass shears and cut right off the top. Sometimes you have to be a little bit more particular. So it just kind of depends variety by variety, but they do Coreopsis. Once they start blooming, if you continue to deadhead and shear them, they will continue to flower for you all through the end of the season. So it really is one of those plant families that as long as you continue to cut and keep them vigorous, they'll continue to produce for you, no problem.
Nice. And at this point of the year, it's feeding with the Osmocote, right?
You can, yes. You can certainly put Osmocote down for your midsummer feeding. You can use Plant Tone and Iron Tone as well. It's really up to you.
Okay, great. And then I have one last question.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have a tree lawn tree. I believe it's a crab apple.
Okay.
But anyway, one of these trees where a lot of little baby trees kind of grow kind of at the base, and uh-huh. so, you know, two or three times every summer I'm always cutting them off.
Yep.
And is there a product or something that you recommend to take care of that?
Yes. So those are that's all suckering growth, and it's good. And you'll find this with any of your ornamental flowering trees that are typically like a fruiting tree, like a crab apple, a pear, those types of guys. But you'll find that they do produce a lot of root suckers and so forth. So keep pruning. And there is something called sucker stopper. I think that's what it's called. And I hate to tell you, it's something like that. And I'll have Angelo say the name, but I think it is sucker stopper. Okay. But you cut the sucker, and then you spray the area with this, and mm-hmm. It'll take care of it. It definitely will reduce the growth of the return of those suckers. So. It might be great. Sucker Punch, too. Golly, it's one of that those names, sound- right? It's one of those catchy names that it's just not in my brain right now. But
okay, well, hey, thanks so much, Noelle. Very, very helpful.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye. Good morning. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Okay, I have a coral bell that I have growing in a in a large pot, and it's really, really pretty. And then I have another one that I would like to put in another pot that's in the ground. Is it okay to put the, to do that? Now, I bought really large pots to do this.
Yeah. Just make sure that you're watering the one that's in the ground. Just make sure that you soak it well before you dig it and then go ahead and transplant it into the pot. And make sure that that pot is ready to go. You know, soil is ready. Soil is moist. It's always good to pre-moisten, so that it transplants well. It might be a little bit shaky because it's been, so hot and warm, but, it looks like the temperatures are gonna, cool off a little bit here coming up, this next week as I looked ahead at the forecast, but we'll still be kind of lower 80s. So just be mindful of your watering again. With coral bells in pots, it's great because, typically your planting mix or your potting soil has fairly good drainage, and that's what they need. They have a very shallow root system. They need good draining, potting soil, materials. They have to have excellent drainage in the bottom of the pot to make sure that your drainage holes stay open, underneath, obviously. And, I will have to say the only caveat here is that you've got to find a good place to be able to winter them over in the pots. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you can bring them close to the protected side of the house and mulch over the pots, if you can bring the pots into the garage over the winter, a cold garage over the winter, or a cold garden shed over the winter, that's great. They just need to be watered lightly once a month over the winter months. It's going to be with really any perennial that you're wanting to winter over in pots. You just want to be able to protect them and protect that root system over the winter, just because it's above the soil. And of course, your garden soil is an insulator, and so it can balance the temperatures and so forth. So that's really the only caveat there, with growing them in pots. Other than that, they do very well.
Okay, one more thing. Mm-hmm. I started from seed a morning glory. And I have it on a trellis, and it's growing great.
Okay.
And it's getting very tall. Lots of leaves, everything. No flowers.
Okay.
So I don't know why.
Yeah. So when did you start the seeds?
Oh, inside.
Okay.
I think in March.
Yeah. They take their time, don't they? They take their sweet time. Morning glories will, and you're waiting and waiting and waiting. And then finally, all of a sudden, it's like, wow, there it is. Do you feed them?
I haven't fed them lately, so I probably should do the Osmocote.
Yeah, for sure. Get some fertilizer down there. That's going to help develop, and they'll surprise you, really. They seem like they're stinking along, and they're not doing anything, and then all of a sudden, they really put on some growth, especially the second half of summer. Just be patient. They'll come, and the fertilizer will help for sure.
Oh, good. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Hi. How are you?
Just great.
I have three quick questions. How often can you put on lightning lime?
Okay. What are you trying to treat?
The lawn.
Okay. So lightning lime for lawns. I can't remember exactly what the package says, but I wouldn't apply it more than twice a growing season. So once in spring, once in fall. Typically with lightning lime, it's going to react fairly quickly, but it starts to change pH over, let's say, 2 to 8 weeks time. So yeah. And also with our area, in Northeast Ohio, we do tend to have acidic conditions, but I'd also probably have you do a pH test to see how that area has changed depending on, you know, how often you've applied it. So you've applied it how many times so far?
My husband applied it in spring when he did the first fertilizing.
Okay. And that's it. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Good. So we typically do a fall application around here. Spring is okay, but fall is actually better when you're trying to work on your lawn and your soil pH. And lime helps obviously balance the soil pH, but it also helps get the fall fertilizer nutrients to the lawn. And if you were going to do one fertilization through the year, I'm not recommending it, but I'm saying if you were, we always talk about a fall fertilization for lawn is like the best because the lawn really absorbs a lot of nutrients, and putting down lime at that time just helps absorb those nutrients more efficiently. But that's what I would do. I would do a little quick soil pH test on the lawn soil and see where it falls, and you may not need to apply any more lime. Or just get on the schedule of applying it once a year in the fall, and you'll be ready to go.
Okay. The next question is, we cut down a trumpet vine, I would say, 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How long does it take for those roots to stop coming up?
I hate to tell you, for being a native plant and being a great hummingbird plant, boy, can it be a pain. Out in the garden. So have you seen other growth in other places?
Oh, yes, all over.
Yeah, yeah. Just keep on going after them.
What would be better, Roundup or Burnout?
Yeah, both are general herbicides. It just depends on what you prefer to use. So you can use the Roundup or you can use the Burnout. It's really up to you. I have to tell you, you just have to keep after it. And spring application is pretty good because it's when those little young tips are coming up and they're just fresh, and you hit them with an herbicide at that time, that'll help. Fall application helps as well because the plant is pulling that herbicide kind of deeper into its plant system. Golly, I'm so sorry because my mom has a terrible time with trumpet vine as well. So yeah, you just got to keep on top of it. Now, you don't want to spray herbicides when it's hot out, right? So don't do that because the plants just kind of shut down. They take a break when it's hot, and so it won't do anything for you, and you'd just be wasting your money. So we really actively, we want to spray anywhere between, let's say, about 65 degrees up to maybe 80, 85 degrees. Like in that window, in that temperature window, that's when you're going to have some fairly good results. But you just got to stay on top of it. I'm so sorry to tell you that, you know, it's just it's a really hard one to get rid of once you're trying to eradicate it out of the garden.
Should you wait till those little stems come up to a certain height?
No. I would hit it as soon as you see new growth on it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then my last question is, we were on vacation a couple weeks ago, and I have a lot of hanging pots, and we put them on the ground, and my husband has an automated sprinkler go on them.
Okay.
A couple of them had dried out. I guess they didn't get watered too well because it was really hot. How far back can I cut the hanging pot?
Really, for most of your annuals growing in hanging baskets, you can cut them back, let's say, to the edge of the pot, 4 inches tall, 6 inches tall. It just kind of depends what you're growing. It really doesn't depend what you're growing. I hate to say it, but, you know, just take off anything that's dry and just bring it right back, fertilize it, and they'll fill out again. You know, that's the nature of annuals. They're super vigorous. They're super floriferous. They'll just keep on producing for you.
Okay, I did some, but I didn't go back to the rim of the pot. I was afraid to cut further than that. But
yeah.
I can go back and recut those.
You could if you want to, but if they, you know, if they're looking like they're greening up and they're filling out again for you with as much that you cut back, that's fine. No worries.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend. I enjoy your program.
Oh, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate it. Okay, folks, we're going to bye-bye. We're going to take one more quick one. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Noelle.
Thanks for waiting. Good morning. You got a quick one for me?
Yeah, I got just one quick question. I have a rose of Sharon. It was coming up beautifully. All of a sudden, two of the branches just died out. The leaves withered and they're browning over. Should I just cut those boughs off?
Absolutely. Anytime you have the dead, disease, damage issue on any of your woody plants, trees, and shrubs, just go ahead and cut them out. No problem whatsoever. Look close, see if there's any type of holes or anything like that in the stems and in the branches, and see if there were any insect issues or gnawing or what have you.
Will do.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Everybody have a great holiday weekend. Be safe out there. Bye-bye.
At Petiti's. Hi, I'm AJ Petiti. Summer's in full swing, and Petiti Garden Center.